after dozens or maybe hundreds of near misses, my phone finally achieved what I think it always wanted to do: fall directly on its screen and break. I had a protective case, which prevented disaster up to this part, but I guess it was just a matter of time. I ended up working on a few things in my office, going down to a nearby store, buying a replacement, 3.5 years in the future, which itself was many times more powerful than what I had before, and using a utility, the contents, contacts, programs, and other data from the old phone transferred over the course of an hour to the new one. There's something sort of a metaphor in the idea that my phone was working just fine, absolutely doing everything I needed it to, looking great, happy, healthy, and then in moments, something happens, and then a few hours later, all of its contents and meaning are being given to something that's going to replace it. Luckily, until that catastrophe comes for me, I can talk about something I've been really enjoying lately, which is experiencing and leafing through the fractal nature of paper creations in the 20th century. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It, a podcast about technology, history, and getting myself out of debt. Thanks to Daniel Boyd, Jeff Atwood, and the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. By the beginning part of the 20th century, and certainly by the middle of it, people are addicted to the use of paper, square paper, easily put into a typewriter or put into the hands of a scribe or artist trying to transfer some knowledge from one department, one group, or one person to another. And in this way, for various values of luck, there are millions of pages created in this environment where this standardized way of communication is available to nearly everyone. And nobody knew it at the time, but along with that utility of paper came an unexpected persistence, especially for transactions that would normally have no life of their own. Conversations that found themselves in memos fall to the wayside, leaving only a paper trail behind them. And dreams, whether fanciful or objectively logical, being committed to paper, never to see the light of day, except for how they're described. Even by the 1970s and into the 1980s, there's a lot of effort to digitally replace what was previously only paper, previously only to be written down, typed, or sent to a professional printer, and unwittingly, this was leading to a destruction of the persistence and permanence of processes that would otherwise never live past their moment. After the organizations or the individuals responsible for these papers moved on, it wasn't always the case that they would live in any way. But the chances were, well, at least slight, that we would see piles put away into boxes, and those boxes taken home, put into storage, placed in someone's attic or in the back of a room, and then forgotten about through decades, until finally somebody, somewhere, assigned with getting that space back, with throwing out the estate of a person gone, would discover them. And by dint of their being saved, they have occasionally convinced people that their worth is more than just the transient moment in the sun long ago. And as we now live in a world where digital transfer is fast enough and digitization is easy enough, there is a natural jumping, a spark, to say, maybe there's a home for this. Maybe there's a life that this will have beyond what it was for. That leads to calls. I'm still getting so many conversations on Mastodon and Twitter, email and pages and phone calls, telling me that somebody has gone into some sort of public sphere and shown pictures of their piles of paper, and asking, does this have a potential home? Is there somebody who wants this? I need to get rid of it. I need to throw it out. The time has come for it to leave my life. Is there somebody it's supposed to go to? Of course, there's boxes that, by their very name and labels, indicate to people that they're worth value. Famous industrialists being named on the outside box, or some sort of project that means something. Terms like plans, prototypes, private, confidential, tell you that what's inside may or may not be a treasure. And of course, we are overrun these days with the narrative that hidden lost items, long ago forgotten, could be turned in some way into extreme and extraordinary life-changing value. The idea that there's a piece of paper or a tape or some sort of equipment that, once you bring it to the right people, bring it to the right stage, will earn you an eyebrow-raising amount of money, it's just endemic now. Where I stand, though, is that for the moment, for a moment that could last for a day or last for years, I've placed myself at some sort of crossroads for people where they're not sure if they want to keep the item around, but I answer the question for them. Of course we'll take it. Of course I will. Of course you can mail it. Of course it will be turned into some sort of digital version for everyone to enjoy. Just contact me. We'll make arrangements. This happens all the time now. People sending me videotapes, CD-ROMs, magazines, pieces of paper, and of course the occasional equipment, all towards the goal of persistence and avoiding the trash bin. It's important, though, to realize that I'm part of a puzzle, a spectrum of outcomes for these items. They may in fact never reach my hands. In some cases, I've been the catalyst, almost the threat to others to reconsider whether or not they should take the item, because if they don't, I will. And apparently for some, that's motivation enough. Sometimes the process doesn't even take place on my screen or in the realm of my voice. Somebody finds a box or has a whole pile of something thematic, they digitize it, they upload it to the Internet Archive or to other locations, and they've done their job, without ever saying a single thing to me. I'll go through the Internet Archive stacks, the Anything Goes open area, and find in there treasures beyond belief, assuming that for you, this sort of thing is a treasure. I enjoy the detritus, the ephemera, the middle ground of what people create. Not items made for a show or intended to promote you into thinking it's more than it is. I love the basic human expression through the printed word, the hand-drawn illustration, the amateur-composed set of media content that turns into, in its own way, a fascinating small archive of its own. In this moment, this present day, people are uploading hundreds, thousands really, of items that are devoid of exact direction, of guideline, where it's left to the person to determine whether it was something worth the effort of scanning and sharing. On my own side, the digitization that I'm doing these days is usually in parallel. 3 or 4 videotapes, what will eventually be multiple audio tapes. And I do that so that I'm not forced to judge whether a single stream of intake is worth it, has any particular inherent value that I have to justify. Bring it all in. Look at it all. Find things you didn't even know were there. People, in some ways, unintentionally self-curate. They grab ephemera, a postcard, a map, a piece of paper that represents something to them, but occasionally represents something to many more people. How easy it is to drop it into a scanner, a flatbed or sheet-fed scanner, and turn it into a digital file, transfer that around the world, and find a small but hearty band of fans, adherents, and audience that it would have never found before. There are punk zines, amateur recordings, individual podcasts and newsletters, individual audio creations that are waiting for the others, the audience out there to discover them. As time goes on, the digital world is becoming so adept at being able to crunch through, to analyze, to produce summaries, to find themes, heat maps, graphs, and other methods of findability. All it needs is the pile, the detritus, the ephemera, the castaway pieces of times gone by from which to build. What drives me now, in the face of an inevitable end, from a fall in just the right angle and wires taking what's me to something else, is the idea, really the provable experience that I see, of people stumbling onto these piles that I've been able to bring onto the site, made them available, and each of them experiencing their own frozen moment in time, where they cleave their lives before and after this item joined their realm of awareness. It is rare in my life that I'm compensated for doing what I love, enjoy, in so many different ways. I'll probably never run out of thank yous to say for people who've put me in this position, who trust me to be here and to do what I believe in. And I'll say that I answer that trust with a promise that as time has gone on and the years have gone by, it has been nothing, absolutely nothing, but utterly rewarding, exciting, and truly, in all meanings of the word, a privilege. This is Jason Scott Talks His Way Out of It. Thanks to James Bekoyanu, Mark Pilgrim, Ernie Hershey, Michael Rubin, Craig Talbert, Dileep Reddy, Sean Kelly, Trixie the Cat, Martin, Sembiance, Tiggs, and Anonymous, along with the hundreds of other supporters on Patreon and elsewhere, who have been supporting me and helping me get out of debt. I don't have any bad test readings. I don't have any warning signs. I'm not experiencing anything telling me that there's a problem with me. It's just dropping the phone reminds me of how fast things change. While I have my voice and the ability to stand up and the ability to think and appreciate and give back what is given to me in so many ways, sometimes it's just worth it to take a moment and say that.